wears black and he stands still as a statue. I blink, and two men appear at his left and right, just as still as he is, but their faces are featureless, skin-covered skulls. I whip my body around, and they stand in my room. I press my shoulders to the mirror. For a moment, the room is silent, and then fists pound against my window. Not just two or four or six, but dozens of fists, with dozens of fingers, slamming into the glass. The noise vibrates in my ribcage. It is so loud. And then the scarred man and his two companions begin to walk with slow, careful movements toward me. They are here to take me, like Peter and Drew and Al, to kill me. I know it. Simulation. This is a simulation. My heart hammering in my chest, I press my palm to the glass behind me and slide it to the left. It is not a mirror, but a closet door. I tell myself where the weapon will be. It will be hanging against the right wall, just inches away from my hand. I don't shift my eyes from the scarred man, but I find the gun with my fingertips and wrap my hand around the handle. I bite my lip and fire at the scarred man. I don't wait to see if the bullet hits him. I aim at each featureless man in turn, as fast as I can. My lip aches from biting it so hard. The pounding on the window stops, but a screeching sound replaces it, and the fists turn into hands with bent fingers, scratching at the glass, fighting to get in. The glass creaks under the pressure of their hands, and then cracks, and then shatters. I scream. I don't have enough bullets in my gun. Pale bodies, human bodies, but mangled. Arms bent at odd angles. Two wide mouths with needle teeth. Empty eye sockets topple into my bedroom, one after the other, and scramble to their feet, scramble toward me. I pull back into the closet and shut the door in front of me. A solution. I need a solution. I sink into a crouch and press the side of the gun to my head. I can't fight them off. I can't fight them off. So I have to calm down. The fear landscape will register my slowing heartbeat and my even breath, and it will move on to the next obstacle. I sit down on the floor of the closet. The wall behind me creaks. I hear pounding. The fists are at it again, hitting the closet door. But I turn and peer through the dark at the panel behind me. It is not a wall, but another door. I fumble to push it aside and reveal the upstairs hallway. Smiling, I crawl through the hole and stand. I smell something baking. I'm at home. Taking a deep breath, I watch my house fade. I forgot for a second that I was in Dauntless headquarters. And then Tobias is standing in front of me. But I'm not afraid of Tobias. I look over my shoulder. Maybe there's something behind me that I'm supposed to focus on. But no, behind me is just a four-poster bed.
A bed?
Tobias walks toward me, slowly.
What's going on?
I stare up at him, paralyzed. He smiles down at me. That smile looks kind, familiar. He presses his mouth to mine, and my lips part. I thought it would be impossible to forget I was in a simulation. I was wrong. He makes everything else disintegrate. His fingers find my jacket zipper, and pull it down in one slow swipe until the zipper detaches. He tugs the jacket from my shoulders.
Oh,
is all I can think as he kisses me again.
Oh.
My fear is being with him. I have been wary of affection all my life, but I didn't know how deep that wariness went. But this obstacle doesn't feel the same as the others. It is a different kind of fear. Nervous panic, rather than blind terror. He slides his hands down my arms, and then squeezes my hips, his fingers sliding over the skin just above my belt, and I shiver. I gently push him back and press my hands to my forehead. I've been attacked by crows and men with grotesque faces. I've been set on fire by the boy who almost threw me off a ledge. I have almost drowned, twice. And this is what I can't cope with? This is the fear I have no solutions for? A boy I like, who wants to have sex with me? Simulation Tobias kisses my neck. I try to think.
I have to face the fear. I have to take control of the situation and find a way to make it less frightening. I look Simulation Tobias in the eye and say sternly, I am not going to sleep with you in a hallucination, okay? Then I grab him by his shoulders and turn us around, pushing him against the bedpost. I feel something other than fear, a prickle in my stomach, a bubble of laughter. I press against him and kiss him, my hands wrapping around his arms. He feels strong. He feels good. And he's gone. I laugh into my hand until my face gets hot. I must be the only initiate with this fear. A trigger clicks in my ear. I almost forgot about this one. I feel the heft of a gun in my hand and curl my fingers around it, slipping my index finger over the trigger. A spotlight shines from the ceiling, its source unknown, and standing in the center of its circle of light are my mother, my father, and my brother. Do it, hisses a voice next to me. It is female, but harsh, like it's cluttered with rocks and broken glass. It sounds like Janine. The barrel of a gun presses to my temple, a cold circle against my skin. The cold travels across my body, making the hair on the back of my neck stand on end. I wipe my sweaty palm on my pants and look at the woman through the corner of my eye. It is Janine. Her glasses are askew, and her eyes are empty of feeling. My worst fear, that my family will die, and that I will be responsible. Do it, she says again, more insistent this time. Do it, or I'll kill you. I stare at Caleb. He nods, his eyebrows tugged in, sympathetic. Go ahead, Triss, he says softly. I understand. It's okay. My eyes burn. No, I say, my throat so tight it aches. I shake my head. I'll give you 10 seconds, the woman shouts. 10, 9. My eyes skip from my brother to my father. The last time I saw him, he gave me a look of contempt, but now his eyes are wide and soft. I have never seen him wear that expression in real life. Triss, he says, you have no other option. 8. Triss, my mother says. She smiles. She has a sweet smile. We love you. 7. Shut up, I shout, holding up the gun. I can do it. I can shoot them. They understand. They're asking me to. They wouldn't want me to sacrifice myself for them. They aren't even real. This is all a simulation. 6! It isn't real. It doesn't mean anything. My brother's kind eyes feel like 2 drills boring a hole in my head. My sweat makes the gun slippery. 5! I have no other option. I close my eyes. Think. I have to think. The urgency making my heart race depends on one thing, and one thing only. The threat to my life. 4, 3. What did Tobias tell me? Selflessness and bravery aren't that different. 2. I release the trigger of my gun and drop it. Before I can lose my nerve, I turn and press my forehead to the barrel of the gun behind me. Shoot me instead. 1. I hear a click and a bang. Chapter 31. The lights come on. I stand alone in the empty room with the concrete walls, shaking. I sink to my knees, wrapping my arms around my chest. It wasn't cold when I walked in, but it feels cold now. I rub my arms to get rid of the goosebumps. I have never felt relief like this before. Every muscle in my body relaxes at once, and I breathe freely again. I can't imagine going through my fear landscape in my spare time like Tobias does. It seemed like bravery to me before, but now it seems more like masochism. The door opens, and I stand. Max, Eric, Tobias, and a few people I don't know walk into the room in a line, standing in a small crowd in front of me. Tobias smiles at me. Congratulations, Triss, says Eric. You have successfully completed your final evaluation. I try to smile. It doesn't work. I can't shake the memory of the gun against my head. I can still feel the barrel between my eyebrows. Thanks, I say.
There is one more thing before you can go and get ready for the welcoming banquet, he says. He beckons to one of the unfamiliar people behind him. A woman with blue hair hands him a small black case. He opens it and takes out a syringe and a long needle. I tense up at the sight of it. The orange-brown liquid in the syringe reminds me of what they inject us with before simulations, and I am supposed to be finished with those.
At least you aren't afraid of needles, he says.
This will inject you with a tracking device that will be activated only if you are reported missing. Just a precaution.
How often do people go missing? I ask, frowning.
Not often, Eric smirks. This is a new development courtesy of the erudite. We have been injecting every Dauntless throughout the day, and I assume all other factions will comply as soon as possible.
My stomach twists. I can't let him inject me with anything, especially not anything developed by erudite, maybe even by Janine. But I also can't refuse. I can't refuse or he will doubt my loyalty again.
All right, I say, my throat tight. Eric approaches me with the needle and syringe in hand. I pull my hair away from my neck and tilt my head to the side. I look away as Eric wipes my neck with an antiseptic wipe and eases the needle into my skin. The deep ache spreads through my neck, painful but brief. He puts the needle back in its case and sticks an adhesive bandage on the injection site.
The banquet is in 2 hours, he says. Your ranking among the other initiates, Dauntlessborn included, will be announced then.
Good luck.
The small crowd files out of the room, but Tobias lingers. He pauses by the door and beckons for me to follow him. So I do.
The glass room above the pit is full of Dauntless, some of them walking the ropes above our heads, some talking and laughing in groups. He smiles at me. He must not have been watching.
I heard a rumor that you only had 7 obstacles to face, he says.
Practically unheard of.
You weren't watching the simulation?
Only on the screens. The Dauntless leaders are the only ones who see the whole thing, he says.
They seemed impressed.
Well, 7 fears isn't as impressive as 4, I reply.
But it will suffice.
I would be surprised if you weren't ranked first, he says. We walk into the glass room. The crowd is still there, but it is thinner now that the last person, me, has gone. People notice me after a few seconds. I stay close to Tobias' side as they point, but I can't walk fast enough to avoid some cheers, some claps on the shoulder, some congratulations. As I look at the people around me, I realize how strange they would look to my father and brother, and how normal they seem to me, despite all the metal rings in their faces and tattoos on their arms and throats and chests. I smile back at them. We descend the steps into the pit and I say, I have a question. I bite my lip. How much did they tell you about my fear landscape?
Nothing really. Why? He says.
No reason. I kick a pebble to the side of the path.
Do you have to go back to the dormitory? He asks. Because if you want peace and quiet, you can stay with me until the banquet.
My stomach twists.
What is it? He asks.
I don't want to go back to the dormitory, and I don't want to be afraid of him.
Let's go, I say.
He closes the door behind us and slips off his shoes.
Want some water? He says.
No, thanks. I hold my hands in front of me.
You okay?
He says, touching my cheek. His hand cradles the side of my head, his long fingers slipping through my hair. He smiles and holds my head in place as he kisses me. Heat spreads through me slowly, and fear, buzzing like an alarm in my chest. His lips still on mine, he pushes the jacket from my shoulders. I flinch when I hear it drop, and push him back, my eyes burning. I don't know why I feel this way. I didn't feel like this when he kissed me on the train. I press my palms to my face, covering my eyes.
What? What's wrong?
I shake my head.
Don't tell me it's nothing.
His voice is cold,
He grabs my arm. Hey, look at me. I take my hands from my face and lift my eyes to his. The hurt in his eyes and the anger in his clenched jaw surprise me. Sometimes I wonder, I say as calmly as I can, what's in it for you? This, whatever it is, what's in it for me? He repeats. He steps back, shaking his head. You're an idiot, Triss.
I am not an idiot, I say. Which is why I know that it's a little weird that of all the girls you could have chosen, you chose me. So if you're just looking for, you know, that.
What?
Sex?
He scowls at me.
You know, if that was all I wanted, you probably wouldn't be the first person I would go to.
I feel like he just punched me in the stomach. Of course I'm not the first person he would go to. Not the first, not the prettiest, not desirable.
I press my hands to my abdomen and look away, fighting off tears. I'm not the crying type, nor am I the yelling type. I blink a few times, lower my hands, and stare up at him.
I'm going to leave now, I say quietly, and I turn toward the door.
No, Triss.
He grabs my wrist and wrenches me back. I push him away hard, but he grabs my other wrist, holding our crossed arms between us.
I'm sorry I said that, he says. What I meant was that you aren't like that, which I knew when I met you.
You were an obstacle in my fear landscape.
My lower lip wobbles.
Did you know that?
What?
He releases my wrists, and the hurt look is back.
You're afraid of me?
Not you, I say. I bite my lip to keep it still. Being with you, with anyone. I've never been involved with someone before, and you're older. And I don't know what your expectations are, and...
Triss, he says sternly.
I don't know what delusion you're operating under, but this is all new to me, too.
Delusion? I repeat.
You mean you haven't...
I raise my eyebrows.
Oh. Oh. I just assumed
that because I am so absorbed by him, everyone else must be, too.
You know.
Well, you assumed wrong. He looks away. His cheeks are bright, like he's embarrassed.
You can tell me anything you know,
he says. He takes my face in his hands, his fingertips cold and his palms warm.
I'm kinder than I seemed in training.
I promise.
I believe him. But this has nothing to do with his kindness.
He kisses me between the eyebrows, and on the tip of my nose, and then carefully fits his mouth to mine.
I am on edge. I have electricity coursing through my veins instead of blood. I want him to kiss me. I want him to. I am afraid of where it might go.
His hands shift to my shoulders, and his fingers brush over the edge of my bandage. He pulls back with a puckered brow.
Are you hurt? He asks.
No, it's another tattoo. It's healed. I just wanted to keep it covered up.
Can I see?
I nod, my throat tight. I pull my sleeve down and slip my shoulder out of it. He stares down at my shoulder for a second, and then runs his fingers over it. They rise and fall with my bones, which stick out farther than I'd like. When he touches me, I feel like everywhere his skin meets mine is changed by the connection. It sends a thrill through my stomach. Not just fear. Something else, too. A wanting. He peels the corner of the bandage away. His eyes roam over the symbol of abnegation, and he smiles.
I have the same one, he says, laughing. On my back.
Really? Can I see it? He presses the bandage over the tattoo and pulls my shirt back over my shoulder.
Are you asking me to undress, Triss?
A nervous laugh gurgles from my throat.
Only partially.
He nods, his smile suddenly fading. He lifts his eyes to mine and unzips his sweatshirt. It slides from his shoulders and he tosses it onto the desk chair.
I don't feel like laughing now. All I can do is stare at him. His eyebrows pull to the center of his forehead, and he grabs the hem of his t-shirt. In one swift motion, he pulls it over his head. A patch of dauntless flames covers his right side, but other than that, his chest is unmarked. He averts his eyes. "What is it?" I ask, frowning. He looks uncomfortable. "I don't invite many people to look at me," he says. "Any people, actually." "I can't imagine why," I say softly. "I mean, look at you." I walk slowly around him. On his back is more ink than skin. The symbols of each faction are drawn there. Dauntless at the top of his spine, abnegation just below it, and the other three, smaller beneath them. For a few seconds, I look at the scales that represent candor, the eye that stands for erudite, and the tree that symbolizes amity. It makes sense that he would tattoo himself with the symbol of Dauntless, his refuge, and even the symbol of abnegation, his place of origin, like I did. But the other three? "I think we've made a mistake," he says softly. "We've all started to put down the virtues of the other factions in the process of bolstering our own. I don't want to do that. I want to be brave and selfless and smart and kind and honest." He clears his throat. "I continually struggle with kindness." "No one's perfect," I whisper. "It doesn't work that way. One bad thing goes away and another bad thing replaces it. I traded cowardice for cruelty. I traded weakness for ferocity." I brush over abnegation's symbol with my fingertips. "We have to warn them, you know. Soon." "I know," he says. "We will." He turns toward me. I want to touch him, but I'm afraid of his bareness. Afraid that he will make me bare, too. "Is this scaring you, Triss?"
"No,"
I croak. I clear my throat. "Not really. I'm only afraid of what I want." "What do you want?" Then his face tightens. "Me?" Slowly I nod. He nods too, and takes my hands in his gently. He guides my palms to his stomach. His eyes lowered, he pushes my hands up, over his abdomen and over his chest, and holds them against his neck. My palms tingle with the feel of his skin, smooth, warm. My face is hot, but I shiver anyway. He looks at me. "Someday," he says, "if you still want me, we can." He pauses, clears his throat. "We can." I smile a little, and wrap my arms around him before he finishes, pressing the side of my face to his chest. I feel his heartbeat against my cheek, as fast as my own.
"Are you afraid of me too, Tobias?"
"Terrified," he replies with a smile. I turn my head and kiss the hollow beneath his throat.
"Maybe you won't be in my fear landscape anymore," I murmur.
He bends his head and kisses me slowly.
"Then everyone can call you Six."
"Four and Six," I say. We kiss again, and this time, it feels familiar. I know exactly how we fit together. His arm around my waist, my hands on his chest, the pressure of his lips on mine. We have each other memorized. Chapter 32. I watch Tobias's face carefully as we walk to the dining hall, searching for any sign of disappointment. We spent the 2 hours lying on his bed, talking and kissing, and eventually dozing until we heard shouts in the hallway, people on their way to the banquet. If anything, he seems lighter now than he was before. He smiles more anyway. When we reach the entrance, we separate. I go in first and run to the table I share with Will and Christina. He enters second, a minute later, and sits down next to Zeke, who hands him a dark bottle. He waves it away.
"Where did you go?" asks Christina.
"Everyone else went back to the dormitory."
"I just wandered around," I say. I was too nervous to talk to everyone else about it.
"You have no reason to be nervous," Christina says, shaking her head.
"I turned around to talk to Will for 1 second and you were already done."
I detect a note of jealousy in her voice. And again, I wish I could explain that I was well prepared for the simulation, because of what I am. Instead, I just shrug.
What job are you going to pick? I ask her.
I'm thinking I might want a job like Fours, training initiates, she says, scaring the living daylights out of them. You know, fun stuff. What about you?
I was so focused on getting through initiation that I barely thought about it.
I could work for the Dauntless Leaders, but they would kill me if they discover what I am.
What else is there?
I guess I could be an ambassador to the other factions, I say. I think being a transfer would help me.
I was hoping you would say Dauntless Leader in Training, sighs Christina.
Because that's what Peter wants. He couldn't shut up about it in the dorm earlier.
And it's what I want, adds Will. Hopefully I ranked higher than him.
Oh, and all the Dauntless-born initiates, forgot about them, he groans.
Oh, God, this is going to be impossible.
No, it isn't, she says. Christina reaches for his hand and laces her fingers with his, like it's the most natural thing in the world. Will squeezes her hand.
Question, says Christina, leaning forward.
The leaders who were watching your fear landscape, they were laughing about something.
Oh?
I bite my lip hard.
I'm glad my terror amuses them.
Any idea which obstacle it was? She asks.
No.
You're lying, she says. You always bite the inside of your cheek when you lie. It's your tell.
I stop biting the inside of my cheek.
Will's is pinching his lips together if it makes you feel better, she adds.
Will covers his mouth immediately.
Okay, fine.
I was afraid of intimacy, I say.
Intimacy? Repeats Christina.
Like sex?
I tense up and force myself to nod. Even if it was just Christina and no one else was around, I would still want to strangle her right now. I go over a few ways to inflict maximum injury with minimum force in my head. I try to throw flames from my eyes. Will laughs.
What was that like? She says. I mean, did someone just try to do it with you? Who was it?
Oh, you know, faceless, unidentifiable, male, I say. How are your moths?
You promised you would never tell, cries Christina, smacking my arm.
Moths? Repeats Will.
You're afraid of moths?
Not just a cloud of moths, she says. Like a swarm of them, everywhere. All those wings and legs and...
She shudders and shakes her head.
Terrifying, Will says with mock seriousness.
That's my girl. Tough as cotton balls.
Oh, shut up. A microphone squeals somewhere, so loud I clap my hands over my ears. I look across the room at Eric, who stands on one of the tables with the microphone in hand, tapping it with his fingertips. After the tapping is done and the crowd of Dauntless is quiet, Eric clears his throat and begins.
We aren't big on speeches here. Eloquence is for erudite, he says.
The crowd laughs. I wonder if they know that he was an erudite once. That under all the pretense of Dauntless recklessness and even brutality, he is more like an erudite than anything else. If they did, I doubt they would laugh at him.
So I'm going to keep this short. It's a new year, and we have a new pack of initiates. And a slightly smaller pack of new members. We offer them our congratulations.
At the word congratulations, the room erupts, not into applause, but into the pounding of fists on tabletops. The noise vibrates in my chest and I grin.
We believe in bravery. We believe in taking action. We believe in freedom from fear and in acquiring the skills to force the bad out of our world so that the good can prosper and thrive. If you also believe in those things, we welcome you.
Even though I know Eric probably doesn't believe in any of those things, I find myself smiling, because I believe in them. No matter how badly the leaders have warped the Dauntless ideals, those ideals can still belong to me. More pounding fists, this time accompanied by whoops.
Tomorrow, in their first act as members, our top 10 initiates will choose their professions, in the order of how they are ranked, Eric says. The rankings, I know, are what everyone is really waiting for. They are determined by a combination of three scores. The first, from the combat stage of training. The second, from the simulation stage. And the third, from the final examination. The fear landscape. The rankings will appear on the screen behind me.
As soon as the word me leaves his mouth, the names appear on the screen, which is almost as large as the wall itself. Next to the number one is my picture, and the name, Triss. A weight in my chest lifts. I didn't realize it was there until it was gone, and I didn't have to feel it anymore. I smile, and a tingling spreads through me, first. Divergent or not, this faction is where I belong. I forget about war. I forget about death. Will's arms wrap around me and he gives me a bear hug. I hear cheering and laughing and shouting. Christina points at the screen, her eyes wide and filled with tears. One, Triss. Two, Uriah. Three, Lynn. Four, Marlene. Five, Peter. Peter stays. I suppress a sigh, but then I read the rest of the names. Six, Will. Seven, Christina. I smile, and Christina reaches across the table to hug me. I'm too distracted to protest against the affection. She laughs in my ear. Someone grabs me from behind and shouts in my ear. It's Uriah. I can't turn around, so I reach back and squeeze his shoulder.
Congratulations! I shout.
You beat them!
He shouts back. He releases me laughing and runs into a crowd of Dauntless-born initiates. I crane my neck to look at the screen again. I follow the list down. 8, 9, and 10 are Dauntless-borns whose names I barely recognize. 11 and 12 are Molly and Drew. Molly and Drew are cut. Drew, who tried to run away while Peter held me by the throat over the chasm, and Molly, who fed the erudite lies about my father, are factionless. It isn't quite the victory I wanted, but it's a victory nonetheless. Will and Christina kiss, a little too sloppily for my taste. All around me is the pounding of dauntless fists. Then I feel a tap on my shoulder and turn to see Tobias standing behind me. I get up, beaming. You think giving you a hug would give away too much? He says. You know, I say, I really don't care. I stand on my tiptoes and press my lips to his. It is the best moment of my life. A moment later, Tobias's thumb brushes over the injection site in my neck. And a few things come together at once. I don't know how I didn't figure this out before. One, colored serum contains transmitters. Two, transmitters connect the mind to a simulation program. Three, Erudite developed the serum. Four, Eric and Max are working with the Erudite. I break away from the kiss and stare wide-eyed at Tobias. Triss? He says, confused. I shake my head. Not now. I meant to say not here. Not with Will and Christina standing a foot away from me, staring with open mouths, probably because I just kissed Tobias, and the clamor of the Dauntless surrounding us. But he has to know how important it is. Later, I say. Okay? He nods. I don't even know how I'll explain it later. I don't even know how to think straight. But I do know how Erudite will get us to fight.
Chapter 33. I try to get Tobias alone after the rankings are announced, but the crowd of initiates and members is too thick, and the force of their congratulations pulls him away from me. I decide to sneak out of the dormitory after everyone is asleep and find him, but the fear landscape exhausted me more than I realized, so soon enough, I drift off too. I wake to squeaking mattresses and shuffling feet. It's too dark for me to see clearly, but as my eyes adjust, I see that Christina is tying her shoelaces. I open my mouth to ask her what she's doing, but then I notice that across from me, Will is putting on a shirt. Everyone is awake, but everyone is silent.
Christina!
I hiss. She doesn't look at me, so I grab her shoulder and shake it. Christina! She just keeps tying her shoelaces,
My stomach squeezes when I see her face. Her eyes are open, but blank, and her facial muscles are slack. She moves without looking at what she's doing, her mouth half open, not awake but seeming awake. And everyone else looks just like her.
Will?
I ask, crossing the room. All the initiates fall into a line when they finish dressing. They start to file silently out of the dormitory. I grab Will's arm to keep him from leaving, but he moves forward with irrepressible force. I grit my teeth and hold on as hard as I can, digging my heels into the ground. He just drags me along with him. They are sleepwalkers. I fumble for my shoes. I can't stay here alone. I tie my shoes in a hurry, pull on a jacket, and sprint out of the room, catching up to the line of initiates quickly, conforming my pace to theirs. It takes me a few seconds to realize that they move in unison, the same foot forward as the same arm swings back. I mimic them as best I can, but the rhythm feels strange to me. We march toward the pit, but when we reach the entrance, the front of the line turns left. Max stands in the hallway, watching us. My heart hammers in my chest, and I stare as vacantly as possible ahead of me, focusing on the rhythm of my feet. I tense as I pass him. He'll notice. He'll notice I'm not brain dead like the rest of them, and something bad will happen to me. I just know it. Max's dark eyes pass right over me. We climb a flight of stairs, and travel at the same rhythm, down four corridors. Then the hallway opens up to a huge cavern. Inside it is a crowd of Dauntless. There are rows of tables with mounds of black on them. I can't see what the piles are until I am a foot away from them. Guns. Of course. Eric said every Dauntless was injected yesterday. So now the entire faction is brain dead, obedient, and trained to kill. Perfect soldiers. I pick up a gun and a holster and a belt, copying Will, who is directly in front of me. I try to match his movements, but I can't predict what he's going to do, so I end up fumbling more than I'd like to. I grit my teeth. I just have to trust that no one is watching me. Once I'm armed, I follow Will and the other initiates toward the exit. I can't wage war against abnegation, against my family. I would rather die. My fear landscape proved that. My list of options narrows, and I see the path I must take. I will pretend long enough to get to the abnegation sector of the city. I will save my family. And whatever happens after that doesn't matter. A blanket of calm settles over me. The line of initiates passes into a dark hallway. I can't see Will ahead of me, or anything ahead of him. My foot hits something hard, and I stumble, my hands outstretched. My knee hits something else, a step. I straighten, so tense my teeth are almost chattering. They didn't see that. It's too dark. Please let it be too dark. As the staircase turns, light flows into the cavern, until I can finally see Will's shoulders in front of me again. I focus on matching my rhythm to his as I reach the top of the stairs, passing another Dauntless leader. Now I know who the Dauntless leaders are, because they are the only people who are awake. Well, not the only people. I must be awake because I am Divergent, and if I am awake, that means Tobias is too. Unless I am wrong about him. I have to find him. I stand next to the train tracks in a group that stretches as far as I can see with my peripheral vision. The train is stopped in front of us, every car open. One by one, my fellow initiates climb into the train car in front of us. I can't turn my head to scan the crowd for Tobias, but I let my eyes skirt to the side. The faces on my left are unfamiliar, but I see a tall boy with short hair a few yards to my right. It might not be him, and I can't make sure, but it's the best chance I have. I don't know how to get to him without attracting attention. I have to get to him. The car in front of me fills up, and Will turns toward the next one. I take my cues from him, but instead of stopping where he stops, I slip a few feet to the right. The people around me are all taller than I am. They will shield me. I step to the right again, clenching my teeth. Too much movement. They will catch me. Please don't catch me. A blank-faced Dauntless in the next car offers a hand to the boy in front of me, and he takes it, his movements robotic. I take the next hand without looking at it, and climb as gracefully as I can into the car. I stand facing the person who helped me. My eyes twitch up, just for a second, to see his face. Tobias, as blank-faced as the rest of them. Was I wrong? Is he not divergent? Tears spark behind my eyes, and I blink them back as I turn away from him. People crowd into the car around me, so we stand in four rows, shoulder to shoulder. And then something peculiar happens. Fingers lace with mine, and a palm presses to my palm. Tobias, holding my hand. My entire body is alive with energy. I squeeze his hand and he squeezes back. He is awake. I was right. I want to look at him, but I force myself to stand still and keep my eyes forward as the train starts to move. He moves his thumb in a slow circle over the back of my hand. It is meant to comfort me, but it frustrates me instead. I need to talk to him. I need to look at him. I can't see where the train is going because the girl in front of me is so tall. So I stare at the back of her head and focus on Tobias's hand in mine until the rails squeal. I don't know how long I've been standing there, but my back aches, so it must have been a long time. The train screeches to a stop, and my heart pounds so hard it's difficult to breathe. Right before we jump down from the car, I see Tobias turn his head in my periphery, and I glance back at him. His dark eyes are insistent as he says, "Run." "My family," I say. I look straight ahead again, and jump down from the train car when it's my turn. Tobias walks in front of me. I should focus on the back of his head, but the streets I walk now are familiar, and the line of Dauntless I follow fades from my attention. I pass the place I went every 6 months with my mother to pick up new clothes for our family, the bus stop where I once waited in the morning to get to school, the strip of sidewalk so cracked Caleb and I played a hopping, jumping game to get across it. They are all different now. The buildings are dark and empty. The roads are packed with Dauntless soldiers, all marching at the same rhythm except the officers, who stand every few hundred yards, watching us walk by, or gathering in clusters to discuss something. No one seems to be doing anything. Are we really here for war? I walk a half mile before I get an answer to that question. I start to hear popping sounds. I can't look around to see where they're coming from, but the farther I walk, the louder and sharper they get, until I recognize them as gunshots. I clench my jaw. I must keep walking. I have to stare straight ahead. Far ahead of us, I see a Dauntless soldier push a gray-clothed man to his knees. I recognize the man. He is a council member. The soldier takes her gun out of her holster and, with sightless eyes, fires a bullet into the back of the council member's skull. The soldier has a gray streak in her hair. It's Tori. My steps almost falter. Keep walking. My eyes burn. Keep walking. We march past Tori and the fallen council member. When I step over his hand, I almost burst into tears. Then the soldiers in front of me stop walking, and so do I. I stand as still as I can, but all I want to do is find Janine and Eric and Max and shoot them all. My hands are shaking, and I can't do anything to stop it. I breathe quickly through my nose. Another gunshot. From the corner of my left eye, I see a gray blur collapse to the pavement. All the abnegation will die if this continues. The Dauntless soldiers carry out unspoken orders without hesitation and without question. Some adult members of abnegation are herded toward one of the nearby buildings, along with the abnegation children. A sea of black-clothed soldiers guard the doors. The only people I do not see are the abnegation leaders. Maybe they are already dead. One by one, the Dauntless soldiers in front of me step away to perform one task or another. Soon the leaders will notice that whatever signals everyone else is getting, I'm not getting them. What will I do when that happens? This is insane, coos a male voice on my right. I see a lock of long, greasy hair and a silver earring. Eric. He pokes my cheek with his index finger, and I struggle against the impulse to slap his hand away.
They really can't see us or hear us? A female voice asks.
Oh, they can see and hear. They just aren't processing what they see and hear the same way, says Eric. They receive commands from our computers and the transmitters we injected them with. At this, he presses his fingers to the injection site to show the woman where it is. Stay still, I tell myself.
still, still, still.
And carry them out seamlessly.
Eric shifts a step to the side and then leans close to Tobias's face, grinning.
Now this is a happy sight, he says. The legendary four. No one's going to remember that I came in second now, are they? No one's going to ask me, what was it like to train with the guy who has only four fears?
He draws his gun and points it at Tobias's right temple. My heart pounds so hard I feel it in my skull. He can't shoot. He wouldn't. Eric tilts his head. Think anyone would notice if he accidentally got shot?
Go ahead, the woman says, sounding bored.
She must be a dauntless leader if she can give Eric permission.
He's nothing now.
Too bad you didn't just take Max up on his offer for.
Well, too bad for you anyway, says Eric quietly, as he clicks the bullet into its chamber.
My lungs burn. I haven't breathed in almost a minute. I see Tobias's hand twitch in the corner of my eye, but my hand is already on my gun. I press the barrel to Eric's forehead. His eyes widen, and his face goes slack, and for a second, he looks like another sleeping dauntless soldier. My index finger hovers over the trigger.
Get your gun away from his head, I say.
You won't shoot me, Eric replies.
Interesting theory, I say.
But I can't murder him. I can't. I grit my teeth and shift my arm down, firing at Eric's foot. He screams and grabs his foot with both hands. The moment his gun is no longer pointed at Tobias's head, Tobias draws his gun and fires at Eric's friend's leg. I don't wait to see if the bullet hits her. I grab Tobias's arm and sprint. If we can make it to the alley, we can disappear into the buildings and they won't find us. There are 200 yards to go. I hear footsteps behind us, but I don't look back. Tobias grabs my hand and squeezes, pulling me forward, faster than I have ever run, faster than I can run. I stumble behind him. I hear a gunshot. The pain is sharp and sudden, beginning in my shoulder and spreading outward with electric fingers. A scream stops in my throat, and I fall, my cheek scraping the pavement. I lift my head to see Tobias's knees by my face and yell, "Run!" His voice is calm and quiet as he replies, "No." In seconds we are surrounded. Tobias helps me up, supporting my weight. I have trouble focusing through the pain. Dauntless soldiers surround us and point their guns.
"Divergent rebels," Eric says, standing on one foot. His face is a sickly white. "Surrender your weapons."
Chapter 34. I lean heavily on Tobias. A gun barrel pressed to my spine urges me forward, through the front doors of Abnegation Headquarters, a plain gray building, 2 stories high. Blood trickles down my side. I'm not afraid of what's coming. I'm in too much pain to think about it. The gun barrel pushes me toward a door, guarded by 2 dauntless soldiers. Tobias and I walk through it, and enter a plain office that contains just a desk, a computer, and 2 empty chairs. Janine sits behind the desk, a phone against her ear.
"Well, send some of them back on the train, then," she says.
"It needs to be well guarded. It's the most important part. I'm not talk- I have to go." She snaps the phone shut and focuses her gray eyes on me. They remind me of melted steel.
"Divergent rebels," one of the Dauntless says.
He must be a Dauntless leader, or maybe a recruit who was removed from the simulation.
"Yes, I can see that."
She takes her glasses off, folds them and sets them on the desk. She probably wears the glasses out of vanity rather than necessity, because she thinks they make her look smarter. My father said so.
"You," she says, pointing at me. "I expected. All the trouble with your aptitude test results made me suspicious from the beginning. But you..."
She shakes her head as she shifts her eyes to Tobias.
"You, Tobias, or should I call you Four, managed to elude me," she says quietly. "Everything about you checked out. Test results, initiation simulations, everything. But here you are nonetheless."
She folds her hands and sets her chin on top of them.
"Perhaps you could explain to me how that is."
"You're the genius," he says coolly. "Why don't you tell me?" Her mouth curls into a smile.
My theory is that you really do belong in abnegation, that your divergence is weaker.
She smiles wider, like she's amused. I grip my teeth and consider lunging across the table and strangling her. If I didn't have a bullet in my shoulder, I might.
Your powers of deductive reasoning are stunning, spits Tobias. Consider me odd.
I look sideways at him. I had almost forgotten about this side of him. The part that is more likely to explode than to lie down and die.
Now that your intelligence has been verified, you might want to get on with killing us.
Tobias closes his eyes.
You have a lot of abnegation leaders to murder after all.
If Tobias's comments bother Janine, she doesn't let on. She keeps smiling and stands smoothly. She wears a blue dress that hugs her body from shoulder to knee, revealing a layer of pudge around her middle.
The room spins as I try to focus on her face, and I slump against Tobias for support. He slides his arm around me, supporting me from the waist.
Don't be silly. There's no rush, she says lightly.
You are both here for an extremely important purpose. You see,
it perplexed me that the Divergent were immune to the serum that I developed, so I have been working to remedy that. I thought I might have with the last batch, but as you know, I was wrong. Luckily, I have another batch to test.
Why bother?
She and the Dauntless leaders had no problem killing the Divergent in the past. Why would it be any different now? She smirks at me.
I've had a question since I began the Dauntless Project, and it is this.
She sidesteps her desk, skimming the surface with her finger.
Why are most of the Divergent, weak-willed, God-fearing nobodies from abnegation of all factions?
I didn't know that most of the Divergent came from abnegation, and I don't know why that would be, and I probably won't live long enough to figure it out.
Weak-willed? Tobias scoffs. It requires a strong will to manipulate a simulation, last time I checked.
Weak-willed is mind-controlling an army because it's too hard for you to train one yourself.
I am not a fool, says Janine.
A faction of intellectuals is no army. We are tired of being dominated by a bunch of self-righteous idiots who reject wealth and advancement, but we couldn't do this on our own.
And your Dauntless leaders were all too happy to oblige me if I guaranteed them a place in our new, improved government.
Improved? Tobias says, snorting.
Yes, improved, Janine says. Improved and working toward a world in which people will live in wealth, comfort, and prosperity.
At whose expense? I ask, my voice thick and sluggish.
All that wealth doesn't come from nowhere.
Currently, the factionless are a drain on our resources, Janine replies. As is abnegation. I am sure that once the remains of your old faction are absorbed into the Dauntless Army, Candor will cooperate, and we will finally be able to get on with things.
Absorbed into the Dauntless Army. I know what that means. She wants to control them, too. She wants everyone to be pliable and easy to control.
Get on with things? Tobias repeats bitterly. He raises his voice.
Make no mistake. You will be dead before the day is out, you—
Perhaps if you could control your temper, Janine says, her words cutting cleanly across Tobias's.
You would not be in this situation to begin with, Tobias.
I'm in this situation because you put me here, he snaps. The second you orchestrated an attack against innocent people.
Innocent people? Janine laughs.
I find that a little funny. Coming from you.
I would expect Marcus's son to understand that not all those people are innocent.
She perches on the edge of her desk, her skirt pulling away from her knees, which are crossed with stretch marks.
Can you tell me honestly that you wouldn't be happy to discover that your father was killed in the attack?
No, says Tobias through gritted teeth. But at least his evil didn't involve the widespread manipulation of an entire faction and the systematic murder of every political leader we have. They stare at each other for a few seconds, long enough to make me feel tense to my core, and then Janine clears her throat.
What I was going to say,
she says, is that soon, dozens of the abnegation and their young children will be my responsibility to keep in order. And it does not bode well for me that a large number of them may be divergent like yourselves, incapable of being controlled by the simulations.
She stands and walks a few steps to the left, her hands clasped in front of her. Her nail beds, like mine, are bitten raw.
Therefore, it was necessary that I develop a new form of simulation to which they are not immune. I have been forced to reassess my own assumptions.
That is where you come in. She paces a few steps to the right.
You are correct to say that you are strong-willed. I cannot control your will. But there are a few things I can control.
She stops and turns to face us. I lean my temple into Tobias's shoulder. Blood trails down my back. The pain has been so constant for the past few minutes that I have gotten used to it, like a person gets used to a siren's wail if it remains consistent. She presses her palms together. I see no vicious glee in her eyes, and not a hint of the sadism I expect. She is more machine than maniac. She sees problems and forms solutions based on the data she collects. Abnegation stood in the way of her desire for power, so she found a way to eliminate it. She didn't have an army, so she found one in Dauntless. She knew that she would need to control large groups of people in order to stay secure, so she developed a way to do it with serums and transmitters. Divergence is just another problem for her to solve, and that is what makes her so terrifying, because she is smart enough to solve anything, even the problem of our existence.
I can control what you see and hear, she says. So I created a new serum that will adjust your surroundings to manipulate your will. Those who refuse to accept our leadership must be closely monitored.
Monitored, or robbed of free will. She has a gift with words.
You will be the first test subject, Tobias. Beatrice, however, she smiles. You are too injured to be of much use to me. So your execution will occur at the conclusion of this meeting.
I try to hide the shudder that goes through me at the word execution, my shoulder screaming with pain, and look up at Tobias. It's hard to blink the tears back when I see the terror in Tobias's wide, dark eyes.
No, says Tobias. His voice trembles, but his look is stern as he shakes his head.
I would rather die.
I'm afraid you don't have much of a choice in the matter, replies Janine lightly.
Tobias takes my face in his hands, roughly, and kisses me, the pressure of his lips pushing mine apart. I forget my pain and the terror of approaching death, and for a moment, I am grateful that the memory of that kiss will be fresh in my mind as I meet my end. Then he releases me, and I have to lean against the wall for support. With no more warning than the tightening of his muscles, Tobias lunges across the desk and wraps his hands around Janine's throat. Dauntless guards by the door leap at him, their guns held ready, and I scream. It takes two Dauntless soldiers to pull Tobias away from Janine and shove him to the ground. One of the soldiers pins him, his knees on Tobias's shoulders and his hands on Tobias's head, pressing his face to the carpet. I lunge toward them, but another guard slams his hands against my shoulders, forcing me against the wall. I am weak from blood loss and too small. Janine braces herself against the desk, spluttering and gasping. She rubs her throat, which is bright red with Tobias's fingerprints. No matter how mechanical she seems, she's still human. There are tears in her eyes as she takes a box from her desk drawer and opens it, revealing a needle and syringe. Still breathing heavily, she carries it toward Tobias. Tobias grits his teeth and elbows one of the guards in the face. The guard slams the heel of his gun into the side of Tobias's head, and Janine sticks the needle into Tobias's neck. He goes limp. A sound escapes my mouth, not a sob or a scream, but a croaking, scraping moan that sounds detached, like it is coming from someone else.
Let him up, says Janine, her voice scratchy.
The guard gets up, and so does Tobias. He does not look like the sleepwalking Dauntless soldiers. His eyes are alert. He looks around for a few seconds, as if confused by what he sees.
Tobias, I say. Tobias!
He doesn't know you,
says Janine. Tobias looks over his shoulder. His eyes narrow, and he starts toward me,